Session number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel
23. Colonel W.A. Waitman, Reel 23. How long did the course last, Colonel?
We were at RAF Upper Hayford, somewhere around 4 or 5 weeks. It was the longest course they'd had for some while, either at Ringway or at Upper Hayford, simply because of the bad weather. The winter of Christmas 1946 and January 1947 was very, very severe. And the hedgerows in Oxfordshire, around the airfield area, were all nibbled bare by the rabbits, who just couldn't reach any green vegetation because of the deep snow. Having gone on Christmas break, I duly travelled back by train on the 23rd to do my duty officer on the day and night of the Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. The skeleton staff that had stayed behind in the mess were very good fun, and I didn't drink it in those days, but I enjoyed a glass or two of cider while they were downing a few beers. The orderly officer duties was actually done down at the Parachute Course Administrative Unit, the Nissenhut wartime camp area, down in Middleton Stoney Village, so I went down there for my night stint. About 10 o'clock, I got a telephone call from this miserable bastard, Major Clark, to say that there were far too many lights on in the camp. I was to take a regimental policeman and go around and put them out. I went to the guard room, got an RP, and told him that we would merely go around and put the lights out in the ablutions and toilets. This we did. The following morning, I filled my orderly officer's report in, handed it in at the station, and got the train duty to travel back up north again. I got home after tea, so in fact this was the fourth Christmas I'd missed on the trot. The first one at Bangalore, the second one in action in the Wangyo Gorge in central Burma, and the third one waiting all day on the waterfront at Singapore. My girlfriend came over from Whitley Bay to join us for tea, and that brightened up an otherwise away from home Christmas day. This girlfriend was the one who had very kindly sent a tin of 50 cigarettes to me in Burma, which I'd shared with my lads because I was a non-smoker. I've referred to her on an earlier tape, Miss Margaret Louise Craven, who in fact they had moved from Stanley to Whitley Bay. I'd known her for two or three years because her brothers were at Durham School with me. We returned after the Christmas break, which was actually extended. The BBC broadcast that because of the weather, all servicemen will get an extra 48 hours leave. I wasn't too sure about this and dreaded being absent without leave and getting thrown off the course, but I knew where Squadron Leader Blythe lived in South Shields. I rang Jimmy Blythe and he confirmed it. And said, if you want to be sure, Geordie, ring Wing Commander at Stanley, Tommy Shield. So I rang Tommy Shield and he doubly confirmed that we got this 48-hour extension. Eventually, our leave was over, snow or no snow, and we trekked down again to Weston-on-the-Green dropping zone for our second balloon jump. Now, we'd been away for about 7 or 8 days, and could have just done with a bit more tuning up, but we had to press on with the courses. There was another course coming up behind us. And I remember looking up and seeing a figure doing his second descent through the aperture in the floor of the balloon cage, and he sort of seemed to stop partly out of the cage. Evidently he'd grabbed the sides, but the quick release method of the instructor was made to stand on the chap's fingers, and he whistled away through and came down in the normal way. We went up, and this time I was to go number one, and Corporal Basil Hall was dispatching. We started to sing Lily Marlene with a certain amount of bravado, but by the time we got to 300 or 400 feet, our mouths were opening and there was no sound coming out. Our mouths completely dried up with apprehension and fear. Corporal Hall was a bit widdly, and he walked up to the aperture with a couple of steps and said, "I don't mind going up to this hole, you chaps, but I hate walking away from it. Number one, stand in the door, green on, go," and out I went. And he got so steamed up himself, he sent me out as the balloon was going up. He hadn't got the clear to drop. It didn't matter, it just meant that my parachute opened quickly because the balloon was going up, I was going down, and it opened in perhaps 0.75 of a second instead of about 1 to 2 seconds. Landed on Eventley. We continued on with the course, but we didn't get a night jump in. And as we'd been there for probably 6 weeks, including the Christmas break, they gave us another kitback descent and presented us with our wings. We paraded on the square at RAF Upper Heyford and were very proud indeed to get our parachute wings. And on the 16th of January, we went by MT again and reported to the Parachute Regiment Reserve Battalion at Aldershot in Talavera Barracks. The Parachute Reserve Battalion, later being renamed the Training and Holding Battalion, extended through from Talavera Barracks right away up through almost to the Garrison Church, and consisted of A to E companies and the headquarters. There are about 8 of us now qualified, and we marched in front of the CO, Lieutenant Colonel Rip Croker, formerly the Royal Leicestershire Regiment and Parachute Regiment, commanding the Reserve Battalion. He told us in no uncertain manner that we were the biggest shower of rubbish he'd ever seen, and that we'd got to pull our socks up. I think this was just an opening salvo. Asked if we had any questions, we asked where we were to be accommodated, and he said, "Find your own bloody accommodation." So we finished up in a loft above the quartermaster stores, and one chap managed to get a bed and push it inside a storeroom, but he could only get in over the front of the bed. Eventually, after about a fortnight in this loft, we were moved to a green hut on the edge of the square. It wasn't a bad hut, 2 halves with toilet solutions in the middle, but we appropriately nicknamed it the Green Ghetto. As I had done 3 years in the Far East, I was what you call Python protected, Python being the code name for repatriation. So I was Python protected and not eligible to go to Palestine where the 6th Airborne Division was based. So I was put on the strength of the Training and Holding Battalion as an infantry instructor and company second in command. At that time, we were training in infantry tactics the two types of soldier: those that had done 6 months at the Parachute Regiment Training Centre and then on the parachute course, and those like myself who had come from infantry battalions and were often very experienced infantry soldiers. So we blended the two together and prepared them to go on draft to Palestine, unless, like me, the older ones had already served abroad for the requisite 3 years. In addition to training at Aldershot, we used to send attachments for 2 weeks at a time to RAF Syston near Newark in Nottinghamshire. At Syston was based the Transport Command Training Unit, where aircrew were taught to drop paratroops and to tow gliders. We provided the paratroops. And to move up there, the lads lived in RAF barrack blocks, we officers lived in Nissen huts, but ate in the officers' mess, and the conditions there were absolutely palatial compared to the Wellington-type barracks we lived in at Aldershot, all named after Wellington's battles, such as Talavera. The pilots were taught to drop 2 parachutists, and then after dropping two pairs that work up to a four and eventually work up to eights, tens and twelves. I don't remember ever jumping there with a full stick of 21 to 23 numbers in the stick. We used a dropping zone at Colby Grange near the main RAF base of RAF Waddington and also on a large grass airfield called RAF Newton. The Polish bomber boys hadn't been long moved out and the large Polish markings were still on the hangar doors. But it was a great time of the year, nice weather in the spring of 1947 and the summer. So whenever our detachment came round, every couple of months, we used to like to get up to Syston and enjoy the flesh pots of Nottingham. We'd had the odd exercise in between, and in the spring of 47, I was sent with nine chaps to do a parachute drop in front of Army cadets at Tweezledown, the Long Valley training area, just to the west of the Aldershot Barracks, out under the training grounds and the point-to-point race course. We were due to fly from RAF Fairford, and that evening we went out for a beer or two, and someone suggested we try the draft cider. And this was the first and only occasion in my life when I've actually mixed drinking and parachuting. I had a couple of beers and a draft cider, didn't feel ill at all, and we had a light supper when we got back to Fairford, and then paraded the next day for the drop at Aldershot. Two tug aircraft, one was pulling a hawser glider and the other was pulling a humble car glider as part of the demonstration. We got in this Halifax and away we went. It would have been my ninth descent, and I was feeling quite widdly and certainly somewhat roughish through the mixture of the beer and the scrumpy the night before. We got all ready to jump, and suddenly the dispatcher put his hand up and closed the aperture door and said that they got a red very light fired on the DZ, which means no jump. So we settled down for the flight back to Fairford. It was quite bumpy, and soon there were six sick out of the nine or ten of us. So they passed a parachute helmet round for those who were sick to puke into. I managed to keep my ringed piece down, but I certainly went the a rather ghastly colour, and I never tried that trick again. Within a fortnight, we assembled again to do another drop, this time for Army cadets at Brighton on the Downs, and flew from RAF Bryce Norton. We had an uneventful trip, and I had quite a pleasant 40 winks on the way between Bryce Norton and getting the order to prepare for action. We were to drop on a ridge, hence there were only nine of us jumping, and Lieutenant Harnetti was going last man, and he carried a small attaché case in his kit bag so to go off on a 48-hour or a 36-hour leave pass. And we swung in, red on, green, out we went, and all got down on this ridge. No doubt there was about 1,000 to 1,200 Army cadets who would get full benefit from it. We motored back through, a very pleasant trip back through Sussex, Midhurst, and back to Aldershot. Sadly, that year, three regular battalions of the parachute regiment were disbanded by amalgamation. The original concept was nine regular and nine TA battalions. In addition, the training and holding battalion was disbanded. So in October, I moved up to the Airborne Forces Depot under the permanent staff of the Pre-Parachute Training Company. I was very, very fit at the time, and although the majority of the physical fitness training of PT was done by the Army Physical Training Corps in the Maynard Gym, we had to make sure that the chaps did their running properly when they had to do a long bash in boots.
Was the training more severe than normal infantry training?
Yes. More demanding. I wouldn't call it severe. I would say more demanding. You had to pull the stops out. At that time, I was very fit and a cross-country runner, and rejoiced at the age of 21 in my own physical fitness. In the February of that year, I actually became engaged to Miss Margaret Louise Craven in the February of 1947, and got back up to Newcastle by train and on to Whitley Bay to see as much of her as I could on the odd weekend pass. Sadly, due to the distance and separation and the fact that service pay was then low by the September, she decided to call the engagement off. And like a parachutist, I did a good exit. When we were at Syston, we were friendly with several of the WAFs, and I became particularly friendly with the family in Nottingham, the Marshalls, whose daughter, Bobby Marshall, was in air traffic control at Syston. And I'd take Bobby for lunch at the Trent Bridge Inn, the famous TBI, and then we'd go rowing on the Thames. And in the evening, I'd take her for dinner to the George Hotel, and we might have a look in at the Nottingham Palace in Arns. But Bobby Marshall was the company mascot and eventually married one of our number, Corporal Bennett. She and I were very like a good brother and sister. It's a great lass. One incident involving an aircraft did occur there. A Halifax got out of control and smashed into the air traffic control tower. And the nose broke off just in front of where the first and second pilot were sitting. No one was hurt, but it could have been quite disastrous. The aircraft did look amusing with its nose completely off.
Was it usual for men in general to feel very squeamish about jumping?
Well, in our course reports, they describe our nervous reaction just as normal. And some people can obviously are less apprehensive than others. I wouldn't say it was fear, but certainly apprehension. And you wonder if it's going to be all right. And some days you feel less apprehensive. Another day you will feel more apprehensive. Now, in subsequent years, many years later, I used to do 5 descents from a balloon in a day, 4 by day and 1 by night. And I still felt apprehensive on each one. And I met very, very few people who didn't have some degree of apprehension. You might call it whittle. I would liken it probably to the chap going out to face some of the very fast West Indian bowling on a bad wicket. But whatever happens at the end of the day, it is a means of transport. And there's great comradeship in the airborne forces. That slight element of danger molds you together. And I found the comradeship of the parachute regiment in peacetime, 1947-48, similar to that as we experienced in wartime in the DLI in Burma. In the training and holding battalion, we did lose 2 boys, Private Smith and Private Tagg, at Syston, flying from Syston to Colby Grange. They were numbers 8 and 9 of a stick of 9, and both became entangled together and whistled in. Not until 1953 did the airborne forces adopt the reserve parachute. The Americans always had it, and I remember an officer coming back from America and speaking at the airborne depot, giving an account of his visit, exchange visit to the United States Army Airborne, that he'd seen a man's life saved with a reserve parachute. The 5th Battalion had a Private Noble, whistled in on Salisbury Plain, Netherhaven or some other dropping zone like that. And then there was an accident involving the 2nd Parachute Brigade headquarters on Salisbury Plain, jumping from a Halifax when containers came off the aircraft wings and underneath belly as the parachutists were exiting through the aperture underneath. And one chap was killed. But a Remy corporal, the container wrapped round his parachute and it didn't open. But the container chute opened, and naturally, with his parachute wrapped round the container, it held him there, and he also grabbed the container. He realised that when they hit the ground 10 to 15 seconds later, the container would injure him. So, rather like a monkey, he shinned up it. I never bothered to find out the chap's name, although I knew him by sight. But a very lucky man who lived to tell the tale. So, fatal accidents were absolutely negligible. We mainly had what we called minor casualties, such as twisted ankle, broken ankle, leg, or whatever. As we were at Upper Heyford for 6 weeks, we had quite a high percentage, and I think it was somewhere around about the 10 or 15% mark, which was quite high. But not all breaks, mainly bumps, bruises and the like, and just missed a few days training.
If a man refused to jump or froze, was he likely to do that again?
He was out. He would be most certainly likely to do it again. And once a man refused, he was whistled away. And I must say that in my time of almost 10 years in the parachute regiment, regular and TA, and 4 years parachuting with the RAF regiment, I never actually saw a refusal until we had 509 airborne across from Germany for a weekend's visit to North Yorkshire. I'd had refusals behind me, but you never saw them again. The aircraft came back to Upper Heyford with them, or wherever you were, and the chap was RTU'd immediately, as quickly as possible, because it was a very, very serious matter. There's no question of court-martialing them or anything like that. But you read officially nowadays, it's been in force for a good number of years now, the officer, senior officer there, company commander, whoever, reads or recites, because he gets to learn in parrot fashion, orders to the company or the battalion to take part in an airborne exercise. And in order to abide by the legalities of the Army Act, refusal to draw and fit a parachute, refusal to emplane, constitutes a refusal to jump. The man's out like that. But that very rarely, if ever, happens in a unit of trained personnel, regular or TA. I've never actually seen it happen. But on the course, there were some. And I can remember before we'd ever got to our first jump, one lieutenant, who'd been a second pilot on gliders, said that he was being called back to his unit, an infantry unit. And in retrospect, we didn't think so at the time. We thought this was a bona fide recall. Retrospectively, one thought, well, bloody funny to be called back to unit when you're in the middle of a basic parachute course. We think that that chap, Lieutenant Chapman, probably had a change of mind and heart. But better that than in the aircraft or the balloon. I saw a third Hussar trickle off the fan exit trainer, which I mentioned in an earlier interview. It you go up the ladder outside the hangar and onto the long platform, and there are about six or eight mock aircraft doors. The instructor puts a harness around you, and it's rather flimsy, not a proper parachute harness, looks more like you get in a children's pram, and you do your normal exit, and hence the name, the fan exit trainer. And this poor chap dribbled off the edge, and obviously it wasn't for him, so he was taken off the course and returned to his unit without any disgrace or black mark or whatever. It was obvious that heights and parachuting just weren't his scene, and no disgrace in that.
Did you find in the parachute regiment, because of the greater demands and the element of danger, that discipline had a different trend to it? It wasn't. It was a bit more severe or lax, whichever.
We had a very, very high standard of discipline in the parachute regiment because it was a training and holding battalion, and we were there to mould together the younger chaps who'd just been in the army for 6 months at the Parachute Infantry Training Centre, which was later renamed Parachute Regiment Training Centre, the ITC, 6 months, and then on the parachute course. And we had to mould them together, and we gave them some very good infantry training indeed, and they fired all the weapons, and they did field firing on the field firing ranges, firing live, and fired the 2-inch mortar, fired the Piat projector infantry anti-tank, that was the Piat. And we had a very, very high standard of turnout as well. Once I'd been given the heave-ho by my fiancé, officers would ask me to do their weekend duty for them at Aldershot at the training holding battalion, and I used to like to do it because we mounted just adjacent to the cavalry barracks, the guard room, and you mounted the battalion guard, the Lille barracks guard, and the battalion fire picket. So you had three guards on parade, around about 40, 50 chaps, and on a Sunday evening, quite a large crowd would come and watch. And we were very, very smart. I'd like to put on a good show, and I took great delight in doing that. A very good comradeship. We used to go swimming on a day off, or an afternoon off in Newark, and have a jolly good time down in the open-air swimming pool. And as it happens, my wife knew that pool as a youngster herself, although we never met at that time. 1947, we didn't meet until 1950. The very good comradeship, and if anyone got into trouble, we always looked after each other. And I remember going with four chaps to the magistrate's court in Bicester, near RAF Upper Heyford, and after their end of course party in the Jersey Arms at Middleton Stoney, they'd taken a car without the owner's consent. And I was sent to give evidence to character. We travelled from Aldershot to Waterloo, and I got a date with quite a glamorous young lady that evening, who was in fact stand-in for the well-known actress Diana Dawes. And I said to the lads, meet me at Paddington, 9:30, and I'll see you then. They were there just like that. We got the train to Oxford and then out to Bicester. We set off to walk to Middleton Stoney to get washed and shaved, prior to going up to the magistrate's court in Bicester. A mail van came past, we flagged him down, said, can we have a lift, please? And I'm not meant to have passengers in this, but get in, lads. So the five of us got in, and they got weighed off and fined in the court, as they all had exemplary characters up till then. Got the train back from Bicester to Oxford, Oxford to Paddington, and I said, I'll meet you at Waterloo, 10 o'clock. And had another date with this young lady, Miss Una Thompson, as I said, stand in for Diana Dawes, the lads. We met up at Waterloo and back to Aldershot together. When that draft went to Palestine, Samuel and another soldier saw me safely back to the mess, as we'd all had rather a lot of beer, and they wanted to see me safe and sound back in the mess. Samuel and another soldier repaid my kindness to them. The other soldier, whose name I won't mention, had actually taken a rail warrant out of the book from which I issued the warrants in the company office. And I discovered one missing on a routine check, a weekly check. Got the company on parade. Pointed out that I'd made sure that everyone got their three warrants, the year's entitlement, before they went to Palestine. So they knew that I knew that they couldn't use them in Palestine. I asked if anyone knew anything about it. There was a crunch on the gravel, and the soldier stood to attention and said, I stole it, sir. I said, right, no one's heard anything. Come in the office. He explained what he'd done to Corporal Williams and myself, that we'd both been out of the office, and he tore one out, used it. So I went to see the second in command, who was commanding the battalion at the time, Major Anthony Farrar Hockley of the Gloucestershire Regiment and Parachute Regiment, MC up at that time, now the famous great soldier, Major General Sir Anthony Farrar Hockley. I told him what the soldier had done, that he openly admitted it. At that time, it was an automatic district court martial in 6 months. And Major Farrar Hockley said, 7 days inside, Bill. You're on, sir. I charged him, dealt with him, remanded him for the CO. He got his 7 days, which was much better than 6 months. And he and Private Samuel saw me safely back when their draft was due to go to Palestine. That, to me, was not only good discipline, but comradeship and respect for each other. Respect for the private soldier, the private soldier's respect for the lieutenant.